everyone. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPM LP 106.5 FM. In the next half hour, we will be exploring issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community, with reports from our team of community journalists, and a live in-studio interview. I'm Autumn McCann.
And I'm Kay Michelle Watson. On this episode, we'll hear about the ongoing fight to secure funding for SEPTA and other public transit agencies in Pennsylvania, and a local artist whose work is inspired by experiences of immigrants. But first, Philadelphia is home to a thriving and diverse Muslim community, and there are many restaurants and grocery stores that cater to Muslims who keep to a halal diet, meaning they only eat meat that's been prepared according to Islamic law. The third annual Philly Halal Food Festival takes place on Saturday, September 27th, to celebrate the diverse range of halal food in the region and also the people who make and eat it. Around the Block reporter Rehana Sadiq brings us this story.
There are a lot of Muslims in Philadelphia, and one thing I can say is that we all love to eat. However, for many Muslims, finding specific halal restaurants or grocery stores can be limited. That's where the Philly Halal Food Festival can help. It's an event where Muslims and non-Muslims can come and enjoy food, community, and an international experience. Noor Bowman and Nada Sadiq are two of the event's three co-founders, and I sat with them to learn more about what the Philly Halal Food Festival has to offer their attendees. So, Noor, what's a misconception about halal food?
A lot of people just think, oh, it's chicken over rice that you get in University City, but it's so much more than that. Any food could really be halal. We have a wide variety of halal options. We have halal Mexican food. We have halal smash burgers. We have halal Italian food. We have West African food, Uzbek food. I mean, you name it, we have it. And sometimes it's hard for us to come across, you know, halal brisket. We have halal brisket at the food festival. And so any item you can think of, we've got it. We are very intentional about making this an international festival to represent the diversity within the Muslim community, but also the diversity within the greater Philadelphia area. And so oftentimes, you know, there's very niche ethnicities, maybe Arab cuisine, maybe South Asian cuisine that's halal, but we kind of miss out on, you know, Mexican and things like that. Caribbean, we have some Caribbean vendors this year. And so we're really excited to introduce some of those foods to our community members, perhaps for the first time.
Nada, why are non-Muslims now starting to incorporate halal meat into their diet?
So even for non-Muslims, there are some people who, similar to kosher foods, they are inclined to eating halal meats because they know that it went through a more rigorous process of examining than the standard foods that are on the shelves.
How did the food festival come to be?
The food festival came about in 2023 when I started seeing all the different halal food festivals in various states. And I thought, why don't we have this in the Philadelphia area? We have such an amazing halal food scene. You know, we have all the stereotypes, the halal carts. And, you know, in college, everyone's talking about good halal food, whether they're Muslim or not. And I thought, why can't we do this? Why can't we have it here? And so, you know, I reached out to my two co-founders, Tabish and Nadja. And I said, hey, guys, let's make it happen. And that's how it came to be.
So, Nadja, what can people expect from the food festival this year?
This year is the third annual Philly Halal Food Festival. And like every year, our theme is celebrating the diversity of our cuisines. So attendees can expect a wide range of foods from across a bunch of different cultures. So it's a great opportunity to try things that you may not have tried before that are in the Philadelphia and greater Philadelphia area. So this year we'll have over 100 food, beverage, dessert, and bazaar vendors. We also will have moon bounces and entertainment. So it's a family-friendly event, and it'll be very exciting as it's been the past 2 years.
Noor, what's your takeaway from the food festival as a whole?
It's not just about food, but the people you share it with. It is a full event. It is a full affair for the family, for the community. You know, it is hosted at a community center where there is a mosque for people to pray. We have a kids' corner. We have the moon bounces and things like that. We have a very comfortable seating area that can fit hundreds under a tent. And it's so beautiful because when you come to our event, it's not one demographic. It's every race, every ethnicity, and Muslims and even non-Muslims coming from all parts of the greater Philadelphia area. And it's not very often that you can see such diversity in a crowd. And as a Muslim, it's not very often that you see so many different kinds of Muslims from different mosques and communities interacting together and enjoying food. And so when you come, you're not just coming for food, you're coming for the vibes. There's decorations, we have an international theme, people have good energy, good spirits, there's so many things for you to buy as far as clothing and things like that. And so all around, it is an immersive experience that I have never experienced at another, you know, local food festival.
The third annual Philly Halal Food Festival is taking place September 27th at the CARE Community Center in Phoenixville from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. For more information about the food festival and their mission, you can visit phillyhalalfoodfest.com. This is Rehana reporting for Around the Block.
Visual artist Talu Bayar has been holding workshops with immigrants to the United States to share their stories in a handmade, one-of-a-kind book that celebrates their stories and experiences. Talu spoke with Around the Block reporter Nat Thomas at the Philly Photo Festival Book Fair earlier this month and described the book and her plans for its future.
It's a unique book, so it doesn't have editions. It's all handmade, hand-bound, on handmade paper. And it's a collaborative project. And it's produced during the workshop, actually working with participants. They brought their selection of photographs and they brought their immigration stories. And then I just got their permission to put it on a hand-bound book. And so I follow, of course, the recent events that affect humanity overall, especially the migrant crisis, because I'm a recent immigrant, and it took quite decades to get my citizenship. Therefore, I kind of have a lot of empathy for folks who are really trying hard to have their either green card or their citizenship here in this country. So I was volunteering for this nonprofit organization in my community. And then I decided to hold some workshops to create safe space as well as some healing space for the recent immigrants and their families. That's how it started. I was interested in archiving their journeys, and the book came about afterwards. Sharing it with a larger humanity is really important, and I'm trying to put them in an installation format as well. As long as the participants are okay with it, I am very much interested in exposing these beautiful resilient stories to a larger community. The first book really took 2 years, and as this is an ongoing project, I'm really interested in finding more community partnerships and then creating these, you know, community workshops and then creating multiple consecutive, you know, following books. And also, sometimes we just think of the world in binary forms. It's either this or either that. Actually, life is more complicated than that. And life has lots of textures, and texture is beautiful. It's very aesthetic to me. So I use that texture. And also texture is very manual to me, very handmade. And handmade always is about work of love, and it's about labor, it's about resilience. So all of these things really make me very, very naturally using texture in my artwork, comes very naturally in that regard. And so let me try to describe my most recent hand-bound book project. So this is an 8x6 book, hand-bound, made from handmade paper and filled with twine. The twine is a significant of like taking that route, that migration route. Twine and lots of photographic transfers of vernacular photography, of the participants' photographs, and some text describing their journey, as well as some of their personal belongings that they wanted to share. And lots of also drawings or like miniature paintings that tie the image transfers together. And it's a very thick book because the handmade paper is a very thick paper and the book is composed of 125 pages. So it's a pretty thick as a sculptural object, you know, and it looks like something that you found in a library from 16th or 17th century. My projects are really about human beings and it's human stories. Their stories need to be dignified and archived. I mean, we looked at immigration in numbers and political polarization, but maybe we can just shift the conversation about immigration for more about resilience and renewal. If I can contribute to that change, that transformation, then I will be very happy.
You can find out more about Tulu Bayar and her work at tulubayar.com. That's TulubayarCom.
Earlier this year, SEPTA announced it was facing a $213 million budget deficit and would have to increase fares and reduce services unless Pennsylvania state lawmakers came up with more money for public transit. But after fighting over the issue all summer, Democrats and Republicans in Harrisburg weren't able to reach a deal. So last month, SEPTA did end up eliminating some routes and reducing services on others. After a judge ordered SEPTA to restore full service, the agency found a way to do that by transferring money that has been set aside for things like maintenance and repairs into SEPTA's general operating budget. And that means that SEPTA should have enough money to operate normally for the next 2 years. But SEPTA did increase fares for bus, train, trolley, and regional rail rides this month. And if nothing changes, SEPTA could run out of money again in 2027. Joining us to talk about the future of public transportation in the region is Connor Deshmaker. Connor is statewide campaign manager for Transit for All PA, which advocates for access to public transit throughout the state. Connor, thanks for joining us on Around the Block.
Hi, Connor.
Hi, Michelle, and hi, Autumn. Such a pleasure to be here with you today.
Yes,
thank you for coming.
Thank
you very much. I want to just start out with the first thing. Why is public transportation so important to the region? Not everybody uses it, but why should everybody care?
Yeah, let's start with that definition of the term, you know, public transit. This is a public good. This is something that we hold in common amongst ourselves as residents of Philadelphia, as residents of the southeastern Pennsylvania, and residents of the Commonwealth. A public good is something we can rely on regardless of our race, gender, class, ability, or immigration status. This is something that everybody can access. And that's something that should be familiar to folks who are listening to public media in this moment. When we look at this in terms of its impact to our region, obviously there's the economic benefit, right? We are in a region where a quite large percentage of people use transit to get to work every single day. But beyond that, remember how much people were terrified when I-95 collapsed?
Yeah.
Just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That was something that everybody across the political spectrum, the national news, everyone was here. Oh my God, we have to fix that. It serves about 195,000 cars per day. SEPTA, every single day, serves 800,000 trips. It is four times the impact of I-95 every day. And yet we do not treat it with the same level of crisis as we did I-95.
Okay, thanks for that answer. As far as the public transit and the people that use it, could you give us an idea of demographics in terms of money that people may be making? I assume that most people are going to think about public transportation, the everyday person is, but somebody from Society Hill or Rittenhouse Square may not be using it. And I, as a SEPTA rider, know that that's not true. But could you give us an idea of numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that's a misperception, not just in Philadelphia, but across our Commonwealth. And so when we look at why people live in Philadelphia, period, Comcast, our major unions, these are folks who choose to be here because of our transportation infrastructure. They choose to invest in our community because there are options to get around. We see that regions that have more dense development are more economically productive and provide more access to opportunity for folks, better healthcare outcomes. And when we are able to even look at something like carbon footprint, we have a lower per person carbon footprint when we have a more dense development. And that is enabled by being, you know, living in closer quarters, by being, you know, able to use public transportation, and then also preserve more open space. So it's that actual catch 22. So we may think that if we're like living in a suburban area that like, oh, there's more trees around me, but we're actually saving more land when we live in closer quarters to each other. So when we think about public transportation, it's something that is very rich for people of all backgrounds and used by people of all backgrounds. Who are the commuters on regional rail? Mostly folks who are upper middle class and above, yes, as compared to, you know, people's perception of a bus rider. But again, as you mentioned, Michelle, that's not who I see on the bus when I ride it every day. I see everybody on it.
Yes.
So for businesses that have invested in Philadelphia because of its transportation, what does that mean for businesses that are here because of the transportation, the easy transportation?
Yeah, well, I think they're really considering whether they can stay in not just Philadelphia, but Pennsylvania more broadly if our infrastructure is crumbling. And so this is a great sort of tie into what is at stake in this moment. It's a real relief, certainly for riders, myself included. I don't own a car. I'm not a poser, but when we see the return of service that happened just last week, that is a relief. That's great. I don't want to, cut that down in any sort of way. But if you've ever ridden the bus for, you know, multiple days in a row, you know that trips get canceled due to equipment malfunctions.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's
yes.
going to only become more frequent and more likely because of this method that we preserved service, quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes here.
Yes.
So when we raid our capital budget, that means we aren't able to replace the tracks, replace the signals, buy new buses, make repairs. I read a story about a year ago in the Philadelphia Inquirer that described the L cars as the hoagie of steel because they're being held together with like crafty welding jobs. They can barely keep enough of the cars in service to run what's scheduled. So our big employers, if they're looking at crumbling infrastructure, if they're looking at a region that's not investing in the long-term needs of its infrastructure, that's not looking good for Philadelphia, especially when we see that we're already a lot of times as Philadelphia, the city, losing out to the suburbs in terms of employment growth, especially of high wage jobs.
Mm. So thank you very much.
Well, I want to jump in with one question and then double back. With the money coming out of the budget where it's maintenance and repairs, once that's done, what happens if there's a need for maintenance and repairs? Where's the shortfall going to come up?
I think you're answering it and asking it, right? Because
yeah.
There just isn't. This is not an indefinite spout, right? And I will say that specifically the Philadelphia region is at a structural disadvantage as compared to comparable public transit systems around the country, where we may raise about the sixth most in fare box recovery, so the most, how much we earn from fares. And
okay.
We also operate the most efficiently on a per passenger basis of any system except for the MTA in New York City.
Wow.
So we are very good with our money when you look at those objective metrics. But when it comes to local contributions, because of what the state prevents us from doing, The state prevents us from raising local money for capital dollars. So we actually are in the upper 20s in the amount of local money we have. So we are spending less than half on our capital infrastructure as compared to Boston, New York, DC, Seattle, Denver, Phoenix. You know, these are not just like big coastal elite blue cities. These are places that are in, you know, more demographically diverse, more politically diverse environments. And we already are spending way less on our infrastructure for repairs and replacement than any of those places. And we're rating what's already at a huge deficit.
Okay, thank you for that. I gave a brief overview when we first came on about what happened with SEPTA funding this summer. Mm-hmm. And you just gave a lot of information about some of the details. One of the things I keep hearing is that this segment of Pennsylvania gives the most, but we receive, I guess, from state government or the least in terms of access. So could you go into that and make it a little bit more clear?
No, absolutely. It's a great question, Michelle. So this is true not only in, you know, Philadelphia to Pennsylvania, but also Pennsylvania to the United States of America. This is something that's very common anytime that you have communities of different sizes and different densities being part of holding common goods, public goods, like we talked about. So there are giver and receiver communities. The Southeastern region is definitely a producer, a giver. So we do provide more revenue to state government than we receive in benefit from state government. And that, I want to be clear, I don't think that's inherently a bad thing. Okay. I think that that's a version of equity, right? Is from whom according to ability and to whom according to need. So think of it that way.
Yeah.
That's similar to our public goods, similar to our tax structure. And I'm speaking very objectively here. This is just the way that it is built in the U.S., at least in theory, right? And so in Philadelphia, yes, we do provide more than we receive, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's something that we can use to our advantage when we're talking about things like SEPTA. We need to be able to keep up our infrastructure so we can continue contributing to the Pennsylvania government in order to build those rural roads and bridges and provide that rural transportation. To go back to your earlier question, there is a perception that in rural communities, it's only extremely low-income folks and or elders and youth that use transit.
Okay.
Area Transportation Authority, which serves a handful of counties in north central Pennsylvania, rural area, most rural in the state, 40% of their riders ride 5 or more days a week, and a majority of their riders are of working age, from 24 to 65, and again, 40% also use it to go to work. So that blows all those stereotypes out of the water about who uses transit, even in our most rural areas where you think, oh, we don't have public transportation. You do have public transportation, even in those areas. And so that's why we're fighting again for a public good. We're not fighting for just SEPTA, though SEPTA is essential. We're fighting for transit for all of Pennsylvania because we all the money comes from the same pot and we all deserve it as a public good.
Okay, thank you for that answer.
Yeah, thank you so much. So do you think you'll be able to explain why the fares went up, though, even though they got money for 2 years to keep on running? Why did they go up?
Yeah, it really, really is frustrating because the fares have gone up almost a full dollar in just the last year, right?
And that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, after they hadn't been raised for quite a long time, right? So let's look at this in tiers. SEPTA said its deficit is $213 million, and it also hadn't raised fares in like 7 or 8 years, right?
Yeah.
The governor's initial budget proposal this year would have given SEPTA about $160 million. So there's a gap there of about $50 million. And then now what they're flexing is from a different pot. So there's still all these gaps that they need to make up. So that's why for us as Transit for All PAS advocates, we've been fighting for something that's actually a little bit more aspirational because we're defeating ourselves when we accept less than we need in order to maintain the status quo. And also to be clear, the status quo is loss. Every single transit agency in Pennsylvania, including SEPTA, the only exception is in the Lehigh Valley, so Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton. Every other system has lost transit service since 2020. And so when SEPTA was asking to maintain the status quo, it was asking for that $213 million to maintain 90% of what they had pre-COVID. So all these things just sort of pile and pile and pile and pile. And unfortunately, we see that increases to fares don't hurt ridership quite as much as service loss does. And what we've heard from riders when we've done surveys of them, I've done one of these myself, is that they are more likely to use the service based on how frequent and reliable it is than based on price. It's more important that the service be frequent and reliable than that it be extremely affordable. You know, that's you know, there's a level, there's a threshold that eventually it becomes too expensive, yes. And this isn't to say it's acceptable to just raise fares indefinitely. But that's why. There's just only so much money because everyone's been just cutting, 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 cutting.
Okay. Yeah. So what happens for 2 years from now if the state doesn't come up with the money? Do we even ever see fares coming back down?
I do not see fares going down. Realistically, though, I would say that there's some great hope in Philadelphia proper. We have the low-income zero fare program, and we have the student fare program. Mm-hmm. Both of those things have opportunities to grow. The low-income zero fare program, frankly, has been under threat by the Parker administration just this year. She was considering cutting that from the budget, despite Mayor Kenney putting it forth as something that could grow into an entitlement. Right now, it's just a pilot program, but could grow over time. So that means if you are within a certain percentage of the federal poverty line, you would receive a free unlimited SEPTA fare card, and there was no enrollment process either, which is incredible. If you've ever used food stamps or anything like that, you just receive it in the mail and you get to use it. What a gift, right? And that is the way we want our public goods to be, right? Is something that is easy to use and something that you don't feel proud to use, right? Right. And so that's where we see opportunity. The fare, the base fare may not go down, but we see opportunity for growth if we can increase low-income zero fare program to be for more people, because right now it has only tens of thousands of people. We know a lot more people could use it. SEPTA Key Advantage is another opportunity where employers pay a bulk price and then provide an unlimited fare card to you. Penn Medicine does this. I believe that Swarthmore and Bryn Mawr College do this for their students. So this is another way that we can expand fare access for folks. And then thirdly, you know, we have seen momentum amongst some city council members to expand the SEPTA student fare cards, because right now they're only available to folks during certain times of day and for certain people. And we want to expand that to all students all day and year round. So while we don't necessarily see opportunity yet to lower fares, obviously that's still the goal. We'd love to get to fare-free buses like they're pitching in New York, right? Wouldn't that be amazing? Mm-hmm. But I think that we can chip away at it for now, because we know that there is this huge deficit that we're coming from in just maintaining service. We can barely maintain service on SEPTA and across PA right now.
Okay, I know that we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to ask one question, and if you combine it with what you guys are doing, yeah. Could you give us an idea of what a good budget for SEPTA would look like, and also tell us what your group is going to be doing coming up next and how we can help?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a statewide organization, we co-created and ratified a funding platform that would restore service to 2019 levels for every transit agency in Pennsylvania. And it would come through a specific set of tax mechanisms that were approved by our riders and workers, right? You know, obviously this isn't everybody, but a representative set of folks from across PA all agreed these are things that seem to make sense for us. Okay. And so with that set of taxes and fees at the state level, we'd be able to restore service to 2019 levels across Pennsylvania, including SEPTA, and increase service 10% above those levels for everyone that's not in SEPTA and Pittsburgh regions. Okay. And then so with that, the best way to get plugged in is through our website, transitforallpa.org. There you can find call scripts, you can find email spreadsheets, you can find actions to take part in, you can join with this movement. Right now we are over 30,000 people in all 67 counties in Pennsylvania. We're proud of that movement.
Yeah. Thank you so much to Connor Deshmaker for taking the time to speak with us today. And thanks to Sheila Laurette Emerson, who is our board operator for this episode.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm Autumn McCann.
And I'm Kay Michelle Watson. Around the Block will be back next month with another episode featuring more stories and conversations from our team of Philadelphia area community journalists. And you can find more episodes of Block by Block on PhillyCam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.